Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This is Steingold. You listen to my man Josh Levine on Rebel Radio. Fuck you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
What did you say, Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I bring you the rebels who are shaping our culture. I'm Josh Levine, and I hope that everybody is healthy, safe, quarantined, or whatever you call it, and that you're finding ways to be creative and productive. I know for me, making this show has been a great thing to focus on. I've got the studio set up in the house now. And we're recording and getting shows out every week. And for me, that's been big. Love to hear. Hopefully it's helpful to you. I love to hear what you're doing to stay creative. If you want to drop us a line on Twitter, Facebook, or wherever else you feel like. And today with me in the studio is one of our last in-person interviews before we move to the virtual format. Steingold. He's one half of a DJ duo with Mike D of the Beastie Boys. Got some great stories to share about that. He's also producing techno music with Lee Curtis, as well as on his own. And he's had a really interesting background. He worked at MySpace, went on to be a co-founder of an ad tech company, and he kind of helps us understand how he's navigated both of those worlds and what brings him back to music. As well as how he's been able to build a really powerful network with a low-key personality that doesn't necessarily say networker when you meet him. So it's fun stuff. I hope you'll dig it. Let's get into it right after the EDM.com track of the week. That was Ayo with Timeline, the EDM.com track of the week. If you like that one, get over to EDM.com and check out more new music. And now let's get into the interview with Steingold.
Mike and I went and played Jimmy Buffett's daughter's pre-wedding party.
No way.
Yeah, but it was during like Ultra weekend or whatever, so I had other friends down there and
That's
just
hilarious.
Got like... I didn't, they're like, do you want to go to the wedding? I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know enough people here. So I like met up with some other friends and just got caught up in what everything else that was going on down there.
I wonder if you're Jimmy Buffett's daughter, like how you, I wonder about her relationship to all that.
Yeah, she's
the, like parrot head thing. And
I think she's just kind of like, well, she's kind of like a, I don't know, in the, like a scenester girl, kind of. So like like the fat Jew was there, like right. people like that, you know.
That's funny.
But it was fun. It was chill. Like everyone was nice. Jimmy Buffett was like walking by me, like,
that's so funny. That dude is like on the low. He's like a powerhouse.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even know if it's that on the low, but he's not like, no one thinks about him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's like Margaritaville's in like every airport, but, pretty much.
Dude, and he's got, they're building hotels now.
Really? Yeah. Margaritaville hotels?
Yeah.
Damn, son.
Somebody told me about that, and then they got like a liquor brand. It's just like, it's unstoppable.
Yeah. I think that's the right way to do it.
Hell yeah.
Like in the background, yeah. in the shadows doing it, not like, it's a mob scene everywhere you go.
Well, yeah, because he's like, you know, I wouldn't know who he was if he walked in right now.
Right.
And so, yeah, you kind of get to move, you know, but then his fans, I mean, I think you're right. That's like, is like you either love him or you don't know who he is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one hates Jimmy Buffett, though.
I don't think
so. No one's like, fuck that guy.
Right.
Like,
yeah, for sure.
Never heard anyone say, fuck Jimmy Buffett.
Nah, there's no Jimmy Buffett haters. So how do you do that? Let's figure that out. How do you do that?
Fuck, man. Yeah, well, how do you navigate that world and not become, like, miserable from it?
Well, here's what I want to...
Like, that's like...
Does that just happen? Like, you're Jimmy Buffett 30 years ago. Right? Does it happen to you, or do you create that?
What was his biggest song?
I mean, definitely Margaritaville.
Okay.
Oh, and then there's that other one that's like a, it's like a terrible, my aunt's a big Jimmy Buffett fan. That's literally the only reason I know about him.
And when did he become famous? Like, you know, you saw like when the Beatles became famous, right. It was like rabid fans chasing for sure. them through the streets, like screaming. Like my dad said, he went to a Beatles show and you just couldn't hear anything.
Is that right?
He was just screaming the whole time.
That's crazy.
At the Olympia in Detroit. Because they were playing on like just little fucking amps, guitar amps, you know, like.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Yeah, for sure.
They didn't have like the sound that we have today. He's like, all you heard was screaming.
Right. Yeah, of course.
But
sure.
I don't think Jimmy Buffett, that was ever the case, you know? No. Like the way he...
No, because it's, you know, I mean, even that one hit, I don't think it's that big a hit, right? It's like, I think, you know, he's more in that Grateful Dead vein, right?
Right, like, right. That's what it is.
It's less about the songs than the experience.
The vibe, yeah.
Yeah. And the community. But I just wonder, like... Do those people, I wonder, can you manufacture that? Or does it just have to happen?
I think it's just kind of like the way everything unfolded, the songs, the audience, you know? I don't know how old he was when he became huge, you know?
But yeah, I don't know either.
I don't think it was like some teeny bopper shit. I don't know, it always felt kind of like more like mature, you know? Like,
sure.
More mature, like chill music for a mature audience.
Yeah. But is that like, it's like that now, but was it back then? Like, I think of.
I don't know. Because my dad, I mean, like, my dad's all into classic rock, and we never were rolling around listening to Jimmy Buffett.
No, because it's not really, it's more, it's funny because I was at my aunt's house last year and she was playing it on the stereo. It's like, it's more country,
yeah,
but it's like easy, it's like light, it's like
easy listening,
it's like yacht country,
right. Light FM, that's like the shit you hear on Light FM.
Yeah,
light
yeah, FM. Exactly. Yeah, for sure. But even that, like, you know, it's hard to look back now and say like what it was at the time.
Yeah,
I mean, we weren't there obviously, but you know, I just think of, like, I always think of Three's Company.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, what were those people? Because those were young 20s.
Right.
You know, or mid-20s.
Jack Tripper.
Like, you know. And but they would go to that bar, the Regal Beagle, and it would be, like, you know, I don't know if it was Jimmy Buffett, but it would be, like, that sort of genre of music that was, like, that's what people were into. Yeah. It was, like, yacht rock.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different, yeah, that's a whole different, I guess, crowd that's consuming that that isn't going to be mobbing you in the streets.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, they're lounging. They're like listening to your songs and just like picturing themselves lounging on the beach with a pina colada.
Well, let's talk about you, man. I appreciate you. We can talk about Jimmy Buffett all day, but
yeah, man.
No, I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely. You're one of those dudes that, like, every time we talk, like, I learn things about you that I didn't expect. Like, you're, like, multi-layered. And so I'm excited to dig into it.
You're going to peel them back?
Yeah, for sure. Tell us about, well, tell us how it all started for you. Do you remember the first record you ever bought?
I remember the first record that was ever given to me.
Okay.
And it was Houdini, One Love.
Nice.
And it was given to me by my older brother. And I think he got it at a bar mitzvah or something.
That's cool.
And I still have it.
Houdini's one of those artists that, like, I forget about him and then I remember, and I remember how fucking massive they were.
Yeah.
And how, you know, how ahead of their time they were as far as, like, you know, it was very, very accessible rap, like, very early on.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, everyone could get on board with Friends.
For sure.
You know, like...
Yeah, there's no way, like, Friends is, like, an instant classic record.
Right.
And it still sounds good, like, sonically.
Yeah,
they were a lot better, I think, than a lot of the old school
definitely
rap, just in, you know, in terms of how well the sound mm-hmm. holds up.
Definitely.
Crazy. So somebody gave you that.
Yeah, my older brother gave me that.
And then were you like, so what happens? Do you instantly become a rap fan or?
Well, my first three tapes too were, when this is when I was like 6 or 7 years old, Beastie Boys, License to Ill, Run DMC, King of Rock, LL Cool J, Bigger and Deffer. Mm-hmm. And I used to just like run those on like auto reverse. Like sure. I'd like listen to them through the night.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say it like, I mean, I don't even remember if I knew what I was like listening to. I just right. knew I liked it. Like,
yeah, at that age.
Yeah, yeah. My sure. older brother, he like told my mom to buy those for me too. Uh-huh. He was like 8 years older than me. So he was like,
okay.
His room was across from me when I was a kid. So, you know, he was playing, I mean, a lot of like classic like 80s, like Wham and Depeche Mode, but also like Kraftwerk and Cybertron,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then sure. like also like, he'd be listening to the Electrifying Mojo and The Wizard, which was Jeff Mills.
Right.
And like, I'd be like tuning in, like in bed, like tuning in to my uh-huh. clock radio, and it's like robots are talking to me, you know? So like,
amazing.
Yeah. That was like, I mean, that was something really special. And
yeah,
you know, being like from the Detroit area to like have that type of experience.
Sure.
Know?
Rebel Radio is brought to you by HoneyBook. You know, HoneyBook's probably the perfect sponsor for this show. If you know me, you know I've had a small business, Rebel Radio, now for 20 years. And so I've learned a lot of the challenges that come with running any type of creative company. The main one being there's just always too much to do. If you're a small business owner, you're handling the administration work, the creative work, the stuff you love, the stuff you don't love, it all has to get done. HoneyBook is an all-in-one business management platform for creative businesses specifically that lets you streamline your process and manage all of that stuff in one place. Invoices, contracts, proposals, calendar management. It lets you do more faster so that you can focus on the stuff you really want to do. It will definitely save you time. So we've partnered with HoneyBook.com to offer Rebel Radio listeners 50% off the first year of HoneyBook with the promo code REBEL. Get started at honeybook.com today and use the promo code REBEL for 50% off your first year. Again, that's honeybook.com, promo code REBEL.
So yeah, first of all, we should say, so we know each other through Mayor Hawthorne, Jackson,
yeah,
Josh, mm-hmm. many nights together at After Work.
Many nights.
Anybody listening, we do an occasional get together in LA called After Work. If you want to get on the list,
yeah. When's the next one?
I don't know. We all, you know, it was once a month for a while, and yeah. then everyone just got busy, and you know, it's hard. I mean, I'm sure you know, it's hard to sustain something.
Definitely.
And so we start to get bored, or start to like make it more complicated than it is. And so now it's like a few times a year.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how I got to know you. I know. So did you grow up with them, or how did you hook up with Drew and Jackson?
So I connected with them when I was like 18 or 19.
Okay.
Just through like, cause that's when I started to really, I was in Michigan State. Mm-hmm. I went to Michigan State. Mm-hmm. But I'd been DJing for a few years by that point. Like I started playing probably just messing around on like my other friends' turntables, like 94, like late 94. And then like 96 actually like got my own, just got some like fucking like Gemini belt drives. Mm-hmm. And like started just buying, accumulating more records.
Yeah.
My older brother like set me off with like a bunch of records too.
Nice.
Like a bunch of like Kraftwerk records, mm-hmm. and just like, so yeah, then like I started to like try and play parties, like get out of my dorm room or whatever, right. try and play parties. And yeah. like I ended up like just going to shows in Ann Arbor, because Ann Arbor was more, I feel like, of like a cultural hub, and like especially in like the Michigan hip hop scene, there was a lot going on there too. A Jackson was in a group called Funktelligence.
Here we go. Better known as Ann Arbor.
My people. Mayor was the DJ in a group called Athletic Mike League. Mm-hmm. And there was also Binary Star, mm-hmm. I'm sure you remember, and yeah, Subterraneous sure. Crew. And so they would always be doing shows at the Blind Pig in uh-huh. Ann Arbor. So I would be driving out. And then eventually I started to like get in and play those shows, because I just started to become friends with all those guys. Yeah. But what's crazy is I found out, because I didn't know Drew, Mayor, Hawthorne until like that time, but then somehow, like, throughout the years, I found out, like, my grandma was best friends with his grandma. And, like,
oh, no
great-grandparents
way.
Were close.
That's funny.
So it's like, yeah, three generations of Detroit Jews. Skipped over my parents, though.
So that's so funny.
Even though I think my dad and his dad went to the same high school.
Oh, really?
But my dad, like, was only there for, like, a year or two. Mm. Mumford.
So what, obviously, you know, Detroit's musical history as well.
Yeah.
Told,
yeah,
from Motown to techno to Eminem. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about growing up in Detroit in a time, in the kind of in between time, right? So you have this, there's this legacy, right? And I'm sure this community,
yeah.
But what is that? Let me try to think of a question. Right, so I had Kenny Larkin on, and he talked about what it was like in that time, right, when Juan and Derek, Kevin, all those guys are, like, emerging, and that's becoming a community. And so you're a generation after that, right?
Yeah.
So what's the vibe in terms of, like, the relationship to those earlier generations?
So that goes back. So I was lucky enough to... Because I had somebody older than me, like my older brother's 8 years older than me, and mm-hmm. he was like, I don't know how or why. I think it's from Electrifying Mojos,
sure.
where they were finding out about like Kraftwerk, and they yeah. would go out and buy those records, and then be playing him and his friends would be playing them, and I'd be like hearing that shit when
yeah.
I was a kid,
yeah.
you know?
Sure.
And like at that time, I mean, there was no like it's funny because I ran into people trying like out techno me all the time. I don't even, I mean, it's cool, but it's like, I'm not even really trying to have that right.
that battle. Sure. But like,
but you grow up
like Shiravari, like number of names, like yeah. people debate. Some people debate because I think Ellie's of your mind. Ellie's of your mind if you ask like Juan Atkins and, but mm-hmm. then is like the first quote unquote techno record I think, but Shiravari number of names.
Smoking on his cigarette, listening to his car cassette, cruising with his hot playmate in his Porsche 928.
Some people are like, well, that kind of is also like, or mm-hmm. it's there, you know, it's just, it's one of the first techno records. And then like this kid the other day, he's like we were talking about Detroit. He's like, well, that's like disco, you know? I'm like, right. well, but like, there wasn't really a at that point sure. in time, like if you hear like Moody Man talk about it, like there wasn't like people, there it wasn't like defined yeah. like that.
Yeah.
You know, it was just music. It was just kind of like stuff that they were making, stuff that they were playing that they thought that was
well, I
like
think
cool
every genre is like that, right? Like no one sits down to say, I'm going to create a new genre today.
Exactly. Yeah, right?
Like they create based on what they know,
right?
And they make something that's a little bit different.
Yeah,
and so you know, you talk about it in hip hop, right? And we think of, you know, there was, it's not really even a debate, right? But like, we think of the Sugar Hill Gang, but then before that was Fatback, mm-hmm. King Tim III, and it was just like that's a disco song that somebody rapped on.
Yeah,
and so is Sugar Hill Gang, but it kind of just moves, you know. And then one day you have Run DMC that's like not disco at all.
Right, right. And that's crazy. Like I'm straying away from, but we'll come back. And Kenny Larkin, we have like I have an interesting story.
Oh, cool.
With involving him because we were sharing the studio space a couple
years right?
ago.
Oh, okay.
I love Kenny. I mean, he's a legend, man.
Yeah.
But it's funny watching hip hop evolution.
Uh huh.
Because like I think about all like the nerdy like arguments right. we get into is like backpacker type like hip hop.
Sure.
Kids, you know, like, but like hearing like the old school guys like talk shit about Run DMC and, mm-hmm. and Sugar Hill Gang,
mm-hmm.
like that's the wackest shit ever, you know, or like right. Run DMC, like those guys, like we were, you know, like we were dressed like Gap Band, and then those guys
sure.
come in like mm-hmm. wearing like Adidas, you know, mm-hmm. track suits, like how we would wear like
right.
dress on the streets.
Yeah, yeah.
And that pissed them off, and they thought that they were whack.
Sure, totally. But no, like, it's fine. I mean, but that's kind of the, like, I feel like all, and you know, dance music is better at that maybe than anybody.
Yeah.
Right, because the evolution happens faster
mm-hmm.
than I think in other genres.
Definitely. I think that's, like, kind of a thing that is getting lost. And I, like, in the last month or two, I've seen a lot of like older school guys like publicly lamenting, like Carl Craig and even Green Velvet, just because like the genre has become so like it's disconnected from its roots. Like people don't know, really understand or like where it comes from. And then the right. EDM thing, they feel like was like a complete whitewashing,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Which
I can understand.
Yeah.
But I also think, you know, and like, who cares what I think? But well, I do. I think it's a language issue, right? Meaning, you know, what does rock being made today have to do with Elvis
Chuck Berry.
Or Chuck Berry?
Yeah,
right. Very little.
Right.
There's a guitar, but not even always.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but it's a common language, and that's just human nature, right? We need to label things,
mm-hmm.
and we, like, that's just part of how we move through the world,
mm-hmm.
is we label things and we go, I like that label, but I don't like that one, right?
Right.
I like stuff that's sweet, but not sour, or
yeah.
whatever, right? And but everything has some sweet and some sour, and,
yeah.
and it has some rock and some techno, or whatever, and we just draw a line and say, well, okay, this is this, and on the other side of the line is something else. But those are arbitrary.
Right.
Or they're not, they're imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, so house music, I guess my point is, it's ridiculous to think that house music made in 2020 and house music made in 1990 should sound the same. or right. should be as connected as our brains want them to be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't work that way.
Definitely. Well, it's funny because then, yes, this is true. But then also there's been kind of like a lot of stuff sounds either the same that's coming out or like people are trying to make, I mean, like 90s like style, sure. like house music has had like a big right. kind of resurgence, you yep. know, like piano house or whatever. And then, so yeah, like I hear stuff that does kind of sound like mm-hmm. days of old, but also, yes, I understand what you're saying. Like everything needs to, like even like hip hop, like I can't, you know, it's like people, if you're like an older guy and you hear older people say, you know, they're not feeling like what, like mumble rap right. or whatever, but it's like, well, I mean, like times have changed, you know?
You're not
so like,
to feel it.
Yeah, it's not for you. Us. It's not right. for us. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
But that's so hard. That's like, that violates human nature, mm-hmm. right? Like our, I think, you know, cause I'm the expert in human nature, but, but like, I believe that if you don't like something personally, it's really hard to see the value in it for other people. Like that's, do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And most of us don't have that yeah. level of maturity, or at least
like, I don't like this. I hate it.
Right.
Screw this.
Right. But that's pretty much. You know, but the evolved or the more it's a different kind of experience to say, this isn't for me, but I understand that it has value for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like right. That's not an emotional thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
And music and art in general connects with us emotionally, right? And so when we try to stop and analyze it, like I think that's when things kind of go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and then like in the old school guys, they just, you know, because they just want their, as I'm sure, because like I kind of see like the techno,
mm-hmm.
like the how it came about is kind of like our version of like hip hop.
Sure.
You know, like
absolutely.
And you know, like those guys, they want their due.
Right.
And I think rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to be recognized as the founders. You know, because I think they feel like EDM came along and it just kind of it just became like this whole other thing that just kind of like got taken
no question
away from them. But also I feel like it opened up, because of course like Vegas EDM became huge, but now there's more like underground stuff happening. Like we're gonna go out in a couple weeks because some of my friends are involved, but there's this thing called Art of the Wild.
Oh yeah.
It's like at the Encore, and it's all like underground, like house and
yeah
techno artists.
Yeah, that's cool. And I want to talk more about you, but
yeah,
I do think it's a really interesting thing that, like, I mean, it's happened in everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I read one of John Wooden's books, coach from UCLA, and he talks about making $15 a game playing professional basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, in every area, there's the pioneers and then there's the people that make a lot of money doing it.
Yeah.
And they're almost never the same people.
Yeah. Will Chamberlain definitely wasn't making, you know, LeBron money.
No, exactly, right? And so it doesn't happen that way. Yeah, in a fair world, everyone should get their due, okay. Mm-hmm. But the world doesn't really work that way.
Yeah.
And it's also not that Jeff Mills was getting seven figures to DJ until Skrillex came in and stole his
yeah.
career. Like,
yeah.
that didn't happen.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, what happened was, there's this underground thing that a lot of people enjoyed and some people made decent livings on.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone came along and made a more mainstream version of that.
Yeah.
Either because of how they look or how it sounded or some combination of things that we can't really explain, but it just works. And that's Diplo.
Yeah.
Or that's, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
And but they're not, I guess my point is, like, those things don't have to be in competition.
Right. Jeff Mills, it's funny because I was just thinking about him. I was just talking about him the other day, but he's just on, like, he's in his own universe, man.
Sure.
Like, collaborating with the with like NASA. Did you see that? Like
no.
He did like a radio show for NASA.
Oh shit.
Yeah, that's like cool. Insane shit in like the like the Paris Symphony Orchestra. He's just constantly, I mean, for someone that kind of like I was saying, like 6 years old, like hearing this stuff, like listening to this on my clock radio, like this dude playing on, you know, like Detroit radio station. And, but yeah, he just continues to like innovate and just like trying to take it to like a whole other level that no one ever thought of.
Yeah. And that's how it should be, right? Like he's got that lane, which kind of becomes more interesting because there's this mainstream thing happening that just brings more people to the table.
Definitely.
So what about you? Are you,
I remember like the initial question before we like started to like skirt off to another lane, but like the party scene in Detroit, like it was just something we would do, you know, like we just started going, like it started going like 94, 95 to like, well, like underground hip hop shows more like in St. Andrew's Hall or whatever. And like Three Floors of Fun where, you know, it was like hip hop on one floor, house shoes, like house and techno on another floor. And I think rock on one of the other floors and also going to like the Packard, like parties at the Packard plant, like Poor Boy parties, which were my favorite parties. And they, I mean, all these, like, I was saying, like, there was a variety of music at Three Floors of Fun, like, the Poor Boy parties were, like, booty room, hip-hop room, you know, like, house room. And, like, I don't know, just that was what we did.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, so, like, that, I guess, like, at the time, like, the Packard plant, like, when I talked to people that were, like, kind of after me, and tell them that I went there, that I was there. Like, they're like, wow, you got to go to the Packard plant parties? Like, it was just like this crazy, abandoned, massive warehouse. Like, I feel like every time they threw a party, it was in a different space. Like, that's how massive it was.
Thinking about it, Detroit seems like probably the ideal location for a warehouse party, right?
Yeah.
Because there's all these car plants.
Yep. Yeah, there's...
Being used in the 70s, 80s, 90s.
Yeah, they ceased to be used. I mean, that's... And that just left it to be this like big empty canvas for things like that. And
for sure.
But it's like, it's kind of crazy to think. And then like when I graduated school and I moved back and I got more involved in the scene, like personally, like I was throwing, I mean, I became like a resident at St. Andrew's Hall in the shelter, which the shelter, like where 8 Mile was, they didn't actually film it there, but that's like, they built like a set, like little ways away, but that's, the shelter was the basement of St. Andrew's Hall. And that's where the infamous battle scenes and things were supposedly took place. But I became a resident in those places. And then this place called the Motor Lounge, which was the first like brick and mortar venue for like underground, like Detroit, like house and techno music.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy. Like I was at something this weekend, like out of all like the random things that I've done and played, that's like people still introduce me as like, oh, he was a resident at the Motor. And it's just crazy and it's cool.
Yeah.
Cause at the time, like all these things that we were doing, I mean, we were just doing it and it didn't, I mean, it wasn't even like that, like the legends that we know, like Richie Hunton and Jeff Mills, like it was a big deal to us. Like we were excited, but they would, you know, like the Detroit, like OG guys would make like a couple $100.
Right.
But they would have to go overseas to make the real money. So like, that's why I think a lot of them, like Jeff Mills and Richie Hunton, that's why they ended up moving overseas. Like, I don't know them personally, but I assume, like, that's...
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, because, like, that, like the real market and money for them was in like Berlin and UK. And
definitely. So he gets his residency at Motor, which is definitely a big deal. Like I've only been to Detroit once, but I've heard about Motor.
Yeah, money. Right. It's crazy. It was like, I guess it was like our hacienda.
Yeah. What was there a moment when you either realized or decided that this was going to be your path, that like you're going to be a DJ as a career?
I had a business degree, but I moved back home and I just started, like, I got a job for like a music distribution company.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't all that exciting. It was like stocking music and like Walmarts and like, sure. But I mean, it was a job, but I started throwing like open mic nights and like started like bringing in people from out of town, like ID and Abilities and J Live and Elda Sensei. And trying to like put on like local talent as well and started making my own mixtapes. So, man, I guess like I've kind of always like woven in and out of it.
Maybe
I'm just like indecisive, but I was like, okay, you know, like I wasn't making like a ton of money doing that stuff. I was like pretty much losing money.
Yeah.
Like throwing shows, like as we were talking about earlier about like putting on your own events.
Yeah.
Like it could be, it's definitely not the easiest thing to do to like sustain and monetize.
Definitely.
And House Shoes would always tell me that too.
Yeah.
He would give good advice on that front. I guess I know that's what I like doing the most. So I just kept doing it. Mm-hmm. And then, I ended up, and then after Motor closed, ended up moving out here. Just deciding that, I mean, I was doing a bunch of stuff in Detroit, played all my favorite venues pretty much by that time. Mm-hmm. And then decided that, I just wanted to, at first I was gonna move to New York, but then just kind of like the landscape, like the rent, everything. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait, you for like this amount of money, you could have like sunshine and palm trees and like
and for sure
this amount of money, it was like a windowless box, you know. I'm like, okay, I think LA is the way to go.
Yeah. You talked about the job stacking CDs.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about the stuff you've done outside of music because I think that's really interesting. But was there anything you learned doing that kind of informed your career path in music?
I think it was very like X's and O's. It was very, I can't remember, what was the name? It was this company called the Handelman Company. Like supposedly they're like the biggest music distribution company in the world.
Yeah, they became something, I forget, but I remember that name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like official music jobs in Detroit like that, like are very hard to come by. I don't even remember how I like came across it, but I mean, basically like I would go around and make sure like the newest Sade CD is stocked. And then there was like, you know, there'd be like displays I'd have to put up and make sure like things are organized in alphabetical order and in the right place.
So was there anything like seeing that side of the business that like, cause you're essentially like working in two areas of the industry at the same time and very different.
Yeah. I quit that. I definitely decided that's not where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
I mean, it's cool. They gave me like a little like company car. I mean, just like some like economy car or whatever, but still that was cool.
Uh-huh.
But then like, but yeah, like doing, I mean, it was definitely a learning experience, but I was like, this isn't for me. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up just kind of quitting that after like a year or so. Yeah.
And then you worked at MySpace?
I did. So I moved out here, but I, you, so Rebel spawned off of Herb magazine,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So I was doing stuff for Herb before I moved out here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like I would like get booked. They would have me like DJing that like orange Scion car, like auto, like, cause there's auto shows and stuff and whatever. And like, I do
in
that
Detroit.
In Detroit. Oh, and cool. I would also like book.
Yeah. So that's how we know Jackson and Mayor and everybody is really through graffiti.
Yeah. So me and graffiti went to high school together. And okay. We used to make mixtapes together.
Nice.
And nice. He went to, that's probably,
I can't remember how we met graffiti, but that was like our beginning of our relationship to Detroit.
I remember when I moved out here, I went to the Herb office when it was on Hyperion. Mm-hmm. I think it was on Hyperion, mm-hmm. right? In like Silver Lake, which is where I live now pretty much. But, and I remember like seeing like, just like someone facing the wall. I'm like, wait a second. I know that dude. It was Josh Glazer.
Funny.
But yeah, that's like, wait,
did he work at Motor?
We worked at Motor together.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Me, him, this guy Gabriel, he's the one who brought me in. But yeah, like, yeah, I know Josh from like just that era, but mm-hmm. then like kind of got to know him personally when we worked at Motor together.
Yeah.
And then still friends now.
Nice.
But yeah, when I moved out here, I was still doing stuff for Herb. Mm-hmm. Like at first I was working with Stephanie, mm-hmm. remember Stephanie?
And yeah,
then,
of course.
And then Karen took over her position.
Yep.
And so I was still doing stuff for them, like Long Beach Auto Show, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that. Is it Long Beach? No, Long Beach Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Or wherever they'd have that.
Yep.
That orange car.
Yeah. So I'd be there. So for everybody listening, we built a full DJ system into the back of a Scion. It was like this crazy, I forget the name of the custom shop, but it was like all on hydraulics. The car opened up and this hydraulic lift had a full rig. And then we used to go have DJs come and play. And, mm-hmm. and it was just kind of a fun way to move a DJ booth around.
Yeah.
So yeah, Long Beach Grand Prix, we did a ton of shows, so many places. Mm-hmm.
If you're enjoying this one, let's go back into Rebel Radio archives. We'll stick on the Detroit theme since Jason's from Detroit. One of my first guests, we've actually had a lot of Detroit represented on the show over the years, you know, testament to how much great music and culture is coming out of that place. But one of our first guests was Tuxedo, Mayor Hawthorne and Jake One, early on. So go back and look for that one after you finish up here.
So yeah, like when I was in Michigan, I would like help book the DJs for that.
Yeah.
I mean, I did on multiple occasions.
Yeah.
And then I moved out here and then you guys would have me do it wherever. And also, I mean, I got kind of involved pretty quickly DJing in LA because like I was also quote unquote unpaid consultant because I was bringing so many like Seven Heads, mm-hmm. remember Seven Heads Records, mm-hmm. artists to Detroit. They were like, hey, like when you get out to LA, like, can you just reach out to all these people on our behalf and just meet with them and like chop it up with them.
Nice.
And one of them was this dude, Brub, who managed this group called Movement, which was Spider's hip hop group.
Oh, okay.
So then like I connected with him and then like within like the first couple of days, like I went and saw like Spider and Steve Wonder, they were doing a 2x4 mm-hmm. at King, and then just got like looped in with those guys and then started DJing for like one of their boys because they would all do shows together with a bunch of different groups, and like one of their friends needed somebody or was looking for someone to DJ for him. This dude Crush One. So I remember I would do some shows with him. And then, you know, just started like getting just plugged in and like DJing here and there. I'd also just went around to different bars and stuff too, like, hey, you need a DJ? Like,
yeah.
I lived in the Valley, so like was playing for this, ended up playing at this place out there on Saturday nights, and it was like the same owners, like the Room.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In Coda or whatever. I don't know if Coda is still around, but that's in Santa Monica. Mm-hmm. They kind of like have all these venues. They all look the same.
Right.
There is a Room in Santa Monica too. And that's supposedly haunted, by the way.
Nice.
But
that's really interesting. Like, you know, I get a DM about once a month from some aspiring artist or DJ who's like, what should I do? How do I get put on? And my response is always like, you just have to network. Like, you have to meet people. You have to find people who like what you're doing.
Yeah, you just have to throw yourself in the mix, man.
Yeah.
Like, I have no idea how I've, like, come to this point that I've gotten to, but it's all just, like, I mean, if you're a good person and you don't even have to be the ultimate, like, I don't think I'm, like, the best DJ, you know, like, anywhere near it, but, you know, people, you know, I feel like people will recommend because, like, I work with Mike D, right? So mm-hmm. It's like that came about by somebody, like a friend of mine, Bobby French, just hitting me up out of the blue, like, hey man, can you do this for me? Like, I need someone that I could like pretty much trust to like do this.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, you just have to, like, everything I've gotten is just from being in the mix.
Yeah.
And like, you see other people out there too. Like, you see the most successful people, like Eric Murillo mm-hmm. and Diplo, they're just always out.
Right.
Like, networking. Like, it never stops for them. And like, I was listening to this interview with Josh Glazer and mm-hmm. Eric Murillo for his Rave Curious podcast. And mm-hmm. Eric Murillo, he's like, longevity in that game is just being out and hanging out with the promoters constantly.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have to constantly be front facing with them, you know?
So, and
like, you can't be a dick. Don't be a dick. Because it's funny, because when I was at Motor, like towards the end, they were doing a trance night, which mm-hmm. is a really bad word in Detroit.
Right.
But you know, that like, they were kind of trying to stay afloat, and that was kind of becoming a big thing in the world, and they were just giving it a go. And talking to those guys, like, they didn't like trance, like the guys booking it and Josh, but they would book people that they liked because they wanted to hang out with mm-hmm. them, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Like, we don't like what he plays, but we want to go to dinner with this guy.
Yeah.
And that's why we're booking him.
No, that's, you know? That's big. So talk about how you do that, because, you know, you're a super low-key dude. Like, you know, I think, you know, we probably saw each other 5 times before, like, you know, we had like a real conversation.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, if someone asked me to describe you, I wouldn't be like, oh, that dude's like a hustler. Like, he's a networker.
Yeah.
Right. But obviously, you have a big network of friends and people who trust you and like what you do. And you know, hearing you talk, like, you've built that, I don't want to say on purpose, but that's how you get down.
Yeah.
Right. Is building relationships. And so I guess my question is, you know, if I didn't know you, I would think you were like way more outgoing than you come across.
Okay.
So how do you do that? Like, I think sometimes people that might be more, you know, a little more quiet or less aggressive feel like they can't go be good at networking and building relationships.
Yeah.
So how do you do that in a way that suits your personality? I'm asking you to analyze yourself, which isn't really fair.
Fuck, man. I mean, I guess it just comes from an inherent, like, passion for, like, the music and the scene and everything, you know, like, that I just do. And like, that's like my ultimate goal in the end, is that I've like kind of like narrowed it down to, is like, I want to like make good music mm-hmm. with good people, you know, that I like respect and love. Like, I'm not trying to like just do things just to do them or like do this type of music because it's like the popular thing now, you right. know, like I really want to do my own thing and like have my own voice. But yeah, I just think like, I think people see that, you know, like I'm not really out to like leapfrog people either, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. take your job. I'm not out at the, if I go to like something, it's not because I want that person's job and things like that.
Right.
You know, like they're you know, like I go, if I'm out, it's because like I really want to go see this person play or mm-hmm. like hear what they're going to play. Like I might not even play that style of music, you know, but I just want to hear what they're going to do.
Yeah.
You know, because I would like to know like what's next or,
sure.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think it absolutely does. So you mentioned Mike D, and I want to talk about that, right? Because you've been touring with Mike.
Yeah.
And so you kind of mentioned how you got connected, but, you know, Mike D could probably have any DJ in the world.
Yeah.
Right, too. How
I told him that, too. I'm like, I'm not Mixmaster Mike. He's like, it's all good, man.
Right. So so what is
like,
it?
I know, but that's not what, you know, that's not what I'm looking for right now.
Yeah, so talk to me about that conversation and that relationship. Like, why does that work?
I'm gonna interject Kenny Larkin in here. Mm. So, not right away, but I'll get back to it. So yeah, a friend asked me, he's like, hey man, like, can you go do this thing? It's like, it's really involved. It's hard to describe. Can you call me later? I'm like, I was like in the middle of like a DJ gig at the time. And I was like, I could call you in like a few hours. And yeah. then he just started like firing off texts to me. He's like, hey, like Mike D is looking for help, someone to help like curate. Cause he was booked himself to DJ. Mm-hmm. Cause he's been doing his radio show on Apple. And I guess that's kind of like led to him, you know, like people inquiring for him to DJ or whatever. So yeah. like he had done like a couple of things and then he was doing this, he was doing Riot Fest in Chicago. And my friend asked if I can, like help him curate and like show him some tricks, you mm-hmm. know, like show him
yeah.
like basically show him some DJ tricks. And, so schedule, I was like, yeah, like I still didn't really understand like what it was. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of like, okay, we'll go see, like, if, you know, like I have a week to do all this. So I was, I'm not going to say skeptical, but you know, I just didn't understand it fully yet.
Sure.
So I didn't go in there like full guns blazing with like crazy, like I was excited to work with them, but I was like, I have to wait and see, like, this might be a really hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. So I get to, we scheduled a week of rehearsals and, you know, we just started, like, putting together the set and stuff, but also just kind of like, getting to know each other a little bit more. And we started talking about like the Detroit music scene. And then he's like, that was the first city that gave us love. Mm. And then he's like, what do you know about things? He like pulled up like DJ Saul, Ass and Titties.
Ass, titties, ass and titties. Ass, titties, titties, ass and titties. Ass, titties, ass and titties. Ass, titties, titties, ass and titties. Big booty bitches that's wearing guests.
And then he's like, what do you know about this? And it was a Kenny Larkin remix of Kevin Saunderson, Future.
Okay.
Which is like, it's a pretty amazing track.
Yeah.
And at that point in time, I was actually like in a studio space with Kenny Larkin.
Funny.
Downtown, yeah. yeah. And so it was just kind of like a crazy coincidence. And, you know, we just started like digging deep into that. And then the next day I showed up, he's like, so how about you DJ, you know? And then we did one show, one big show, and he, you know, it's like I'm DJing, he's on the mic, he's also like he's got like his own station too with mm-hmm. like triggering effects mm-hmm. and like he like we built on that from like that was like a really stripped down version, but then for like our next we did like little shows in between that and the next like big like festival tour,
yeah,
like smaller stuff like movie premiere stuff and like fashion stuff mm-hmm. but then you know we just like it just kind of like naturally I think we like musically we're definitely on the same page and that's you know like that comes from I feel like it's important to like have convictions and like not like I don't just accept everything.
Sure.
You know, just because it's like the big thing or the new like popular like genre of whatever. You know, like if I say something, you know, if I'm like fuck. If I say something if I don't like it, you know, he'd be like, oh shit, he's like Ad-Rock would say the same thing. You know, I'm like, okay. You know, like okay. So
funny.
So we kind of, yeah, we're on the same page. We have the same like opinions. I feel like yeah. a lot of the same opinions and I was working, like I had like a full-time job that I left in like 2013 to like focus back on music 100%. But I wanted to like, I like stripped everything back. I'm like, I want to focus on like what, like kind of more my roots, you know, like,
yeah.
I want to make. Like, I want to focus more on kind of, like, just, like, more, like, underground, like, dance music stuff. Mm-hmm. I was still, like, also playing, like, hip-hop, also, like, out at different right. venues. But, you know, like, just focus on everything that, like, the square root of everything that I like, you know? Mm. Like, no compromise.
What has Mike taught you?
I think he is... For, like, someone that's been so long in the game, he's just, like, he's exactly, like I was saying, like he's someone who's always, they've always pushed the boundaries.
Yeah.
With no compromise. They never, like, I mean, of course they did stuff like Fight for Your Right, you know, that maybe that's not, they're not most excited about that. Like, we would probably never play that, you know, but, you know. But they, you know, they're vocal about, they think it's just kind of funny, you know, right. like, but, you know, like you see, like as their catalog, as they progress as artists, they did what they wanted to do, you know? Yeah. And what I was saying before, like what I kind of like took a step back and kind of like retooled and just stepped away from it and then came back. It's like, I want to do it. Like everything I want to do like my way, like, because it's like I want it to be my voice. Mm. And I feel like he is that person, like the Beastie Boys sure. are that group. Like yeah. they always push the boundaries.
Yeah.
And he's also just, I mean, as far as like a rock star that's been in the game for so long, he's just like, I feel like he's kind of like the perfect person to kind of like have as like a guide to, you know, like he's,
yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. He's like, he's a family dude. Now he's in yeah. his 50s. He's a family dude. He's a sommelier. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not a tragic figure, right. you know?
Oh, no, like, definitely not.
And he's a good dude too, you yeah. know, like he's very, like I've been in other situations, you know, like touring with groups or whatever, that it wasn't the best, like it was fun in a lot of ways and a great learning experience. But after a while, like I just didn't feel like I fit in there anymore. Like, mm-hmm. like I feel like the team, like Mike and like the team, it's like I'm in a good place with them in the music industry,
yeah.
you know, which is a crazy industry. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned kind of taking some time off, and I know you started, was it a digital agency?
I did, yeah. So I was in MySpace.
Okay.
And random, like I found that job on Craigslist.
No way.
But they didn't respond to me, but I knew I worked with a girl at that time who her best friend was the PR girl for MySpace.
Okay.
So like I waited a while and then we all had lunch at some point. I was like, oh, I emailed that. I saw like a job posting and she's like, oh, and like that day, like someone hit me up and was like, can you come in today for an interview? And I was like, sure. And I went in and then that day they hired me. And that was on my birthday.
That's cool.
Happy birthday to me.
No kidding.
Tom. But yeah, so I was there for a while and like I got involved with them too, just DJing their events.
Sure.
And then I was there for a few years and that, you know, like through their acquisition and then the nightlife dude, do you remember Ted, the nightlife guy?
No.
Ted Skillett?
No, we worked with Roslyn a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because Roslyn ended up like coming and working with the company that we started kind of after I left though, but I was still... Okay. But yeah, Roslyn, she was there when I started too. Yeah. He was also there. They were both in the same kind of department, just like doing doing entertainment stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But, he broke off and kind of started his own company at one point. And then I just knew it just felt like everything was going to fall apart in MySpace, and I just hit him up, like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm trying to get this off the ground, and then we just had lunch that day, and I was like, I think I could, like, bring a bunch of clients to you now.
Nice.
And then that it happened pretty much that same day. And then...
go back to the feeling that everything's going to fall apart.
At MySpace?
Yeah. What? Tell me about that feeling because, I mean, I've worked in companies that have fallen apart, my companies. But I've never had, you know, I've never been inside a company like that. But we see it from the outside all the time. And I think it's easy to wonder, how did no one see it?
Yeah. For a tech company to stay afloat and innovative in the marketplace when there's some, like, when you've got, like, companies like Facebook that just came out of nowhere. And I remember the first time I laid eyes on Facebook, like, there was a USC student that worked in the office. You had to be a student to get on Facebook. Yeah. And we were all, like, huddled around our desks, like, whoa. Like, this is, like, we'd heard about it, but we'd never seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of, like, MySpace was such, like, a force at the time. I mean, it was a fun ride, definitely, working there. But it was such a force. You almost, at that point in time, you didn't feel like anything else could take you down, you know?
Of course.
But once we, like, when we got bought, like, you see the suits start rolling in.
Yeah.
And then you see the barriers to innovation. You know, like the bureaucracy,
mm-hmm.
when people would just be able to just meet on the fly and like, think about a new product.
Yeah, like, and hey, then I just, got an idea.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And then just decide they want to execute that.
Yeah.
You know, like then it starts to take, you know, 3 months
mm-hmm.
or maybe longer
mm-hmm.
to get things done.
Yeah.
And I mean, it just became, you just felt that it just became corporate. You know, like from something we all fit in like one room and it was just very young and hip and energetic. And then they just like, we were in Santa Monica and then they moved us to Beverly Hills and it just grew so fast and just became so corporate.
So, you know, you could see how, you know, a young guy in that situation would be tempted to think, well, you know, obviously those guys know something I don't, right? Like, yeah, this is changing, but, you know, maybe it's for the better, right?
Yeah.
So what kept you from thinking that?
Fuck. It was a long time ago.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you, so there's like, there's, that's an important lesson.
Yeah.
Right.
Definitely.
Which is like, you're in it. Things are great. It's funny. A quick side note. I was at South by Southwest. This would have been a couple years before that. I'm at the Four Seasons. I got introduced to Jonathan, the founder of Friendster.
Really?
I think that was his name. No one knows anymore.
Yeah, I never even knew the name of the.
And it was right when MySpace was like starting to bubble.
Yeah.
And I asked him, like, and we're having a coffee, whatever, talking about random shit, music, I'm sure. And I'm like, so what do you think about MySpace? And he was like,
yeah.
And like in that moment, I knew you're fucked.
Yeah.
Right? Because
you can't discount.
Yeah. Right? And he was like, oh, wait, we're about to roll out version 2, like something like that. And he's like, we're going to kill him. And, you know, yeah, confidence is great. Like belief in your product is great. But he was so dismissive that I just knew in that moment. Like if I had stock, I would have sold it that day.
Yeah. I just think like they started to change, try to do redesigns. Like nothing seemed to work.
Yeah.
And I think when you see people in the office, like on Facebook.
Yeah, sure.
That work in MySpace.
Right.
Like you just know, you just felt that.
Yeah.
They didn't disappear, like, but they did like mass layoffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And how do you take that lesson into then the rest of your life?
I think that for me personally, I mean, I just like to always be like ear to the streets, like what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, you can't be dismissive of like new genres and new trends and, you know, but yeah. I think stay open-minded and don't sell anything to Rupert Murdoch.
That's probably good. Well, it sort of worked out for them, right? They got their money. And,
yeah.
But no.
But
their legacy is trash, right? Like,
yeah.
If, you know, you had the chance to build something that was meaningful to the world, and it was for a really short period of time.
Yep.
So you kind of go down that direction in the tech world. In digital media, and then you kind of found your way back to music.
Yep.
So two questions.
I was still doing, like, I was still DJing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Through, like, I just kind of, like, in the 2000s, I was doing the Hollywood club scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
playing like. Area on Wednesday nights, like you know, like right. just doing kind of like the scene-y stuff,
mm-hmm.
and like I also decided, I just felt like it wasn't for me, you know.
Yeah.
It was fun at first. I was just going with it.
Yeah.
You know. But
so looking back, why is that a good idea? If you're advising some, you know, up and coming DJ producer, why was it a good idea to kind of take that detour in your career?
Well, I mean, it was just, I was just having fun.
Yeah.
You know, I was just going with it.
Yeah.
But like musically, I wasn't progressing, I don't think, mm-hmm. you know, but I was meeting a lot of good people. I was just kind of going with it at the time, you know? So, yeah, I just feel like, I don't know if it's a good or bad idea for anyone else, but like, I feel like it was a good idea for me. Like I could have just been focusing on what I've been focusing on since, you know, like for the past like 8 years or so. And maybe I would have gotten, like, I've made a lot of headway.
Mm-hmm.
Put out a lot of good music the past couple of years that I believe in and I'm excited about. Like I could have been focusing on that 100%,
mm-hmm.
but you know, that's, just not what happened.
Sure.
You know, so that's, yeah. I mean, I definitely learned a lot of like just skills, like working DJ skills, like how to play those rooms. Mm-hmm. And there was like a certain style and like that. I mean, that was a really exciting time in LA, honestly. It's like the DJ AM years.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was really inspired by that as well.
Yeah.
Even though like style wise, it was on another level. Mm-hmm. Music wise, mm-hmm. not so much, you right. know, like, but just being, I mean, playing those rooms and navigating that scene is like, is its own beast.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's inspiring you now?
I mean, just what's inspiring me now? Man, so many different things. I'm just inspired by like how far like my hometown scene is gone, you mm-hmm. know, and just like to being a voice for that, mm-hmm. you know, like yeah. being out here, like still kind of representing where I came from, you know, initially.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, like going out like this, I saw Seth Troxler this weekend, huge sold out venue.
Yeah.
He played for 6 hours straight and it was
crazy,
you know, like seeing that, like going out in the world, like we played in Belgium over the, a few months ago. And then I went to Ibiza after that. And then, you know, just like meeting up with a buddy of mine from Detroit and mm-hmm. then like meeting up with, like we met up with Seth Troxler and like went and saw Carl Craig. Like there's just so much Detroit mm-hmm. in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's just like, to see how far that's, like, I can't get enough of it. To see how far that's come.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
From like, Jeff Mills is the wizard, you know, when I'm a kid.
Sure.
To like, it being just a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm always fascinated with Detroit just as, you know, I think twice or in two different industries, Detroit's shown us that you can be small and have a massive impact.
Yeah.
That, you know, they did that in music, they did that in cars. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something about that that the rest of us can learn from.
Right. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, I think that, like, the feeling that no one is paying attention to you mm. makes you, like, makes you want to have a bigger voice, sure. I guess. Like, it's hard to describe, but yeah, like, when we're younger and you go out of town and, like, you say where you're from, people are like, where? Like, why? Like, who would ever go there? So, like, you kind of, like, everyone has that chip on their shoulder.
That's funny. Yeah, it's good. It's good fuel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So, what are you working on next?
I have another EP that I'm wrapping up with my buddy Lee Curtis. That I think it's gonna come out. Our last EP came out on Vision Quest. Mm-hmm. Then I'm working on my own, like, I'm really focusing on, because all the stuff I put out over the past couple of years have been collaborations. So, you know, I mean, it's been amazing. Like, I've been able to put music out on Stone's Throw with my buddy Elvis Suarez. Mm-hmm. We did, we had this Heart and Soul project. And then working with this really talented singer, Spencer, we worked with, we put a track out, me, him, and Elvis on Gladys Pizarro from Strictly Rhythms, new label, Launch Entertainment. It was just amazing to be able to, like, see if I could just be in a constant state of geeking out, you know, like,
yeah,
that's just where I want to be, you know, sure. Like, okay, Strictly Rhythm, one of like the best labels in house music history, probably the best music in house music history. And like now we're working with the lady who launched that, you know.
Massive. Yeah.
And but they've like everything I've done have all been like collaborations. So mm-hmm. like this year I'm just like, I'm gonna do my own shit. And then like maybe get some features. So like I've been working a lot of my own like just solo projects. Like nice. I want to do two. My goal is to do two solo EPs this year. And then yeah, and then I have another one with Lee Curtis as well.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, I got to get to a lightning round before we let you go. What's your favorite city to travel to?
Good question. Tokyo.
Yeah.
And we're about to go back. You like Tokyo?
Yeah, I love it there.
It's fucking, dude, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's hard. Like, I feel like I should work for the Board of Tourism because it's like, I have to tell everyone how amazing Tokyo is.
I think they have a lot of people doing free work for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's your favorite DJ?
What genre?
You can have more than one.
Okay. My favorite hip hop DJ, Jazzy Jeff. My favorite dance music DJ. I have to say, like, I'm just going to go back to Terrence Parker.
Nice.
But I, like, I think the best DJ in the world probably, like, I think, like, I've just seen, I think Seth Troxler is probably one of the better DJs in the world at this moment. But Terrence Parker, definitely, he was, like, when I was a kid, like, he was, like, the perfect mix of everything that I like, because he was like a house DJ but would scratch and do doubles, mm-hmm. like turntable stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's the last great book you read?
Malcolm Gladwell, Outsiders.
Outliers.
Outliers.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, that's a good one. What movie have you seen the most in your life?
Heat, probably.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good one to see.
Yeah, that was the first time Al Pacino and Robert De Niro were ever in like a scene together.
Yeah. That was good. It's funny, like I remember when that came out and it was almost like, I think it did well, but I think it also had like this expectation that they could never meet.
Yeah,
because everyone was so excited to see the two of them,
mm-hmm.
and like so when I saw it, I was like, "Ah, it's not that good." And then like I went back to it years later, I was mm-hmm. like, "Ah, it's a great movie."
I don't know why we were all over it.
I think I just you'd grown up with the two of them as icons, and then it was almost like there's no way that anything could live up to this idea of putting them together. But it was a good movie.
Yeah, I have to say, I didn't see it in the theaters.
Right. Yeah, sure.
Like, all throughout when I was in Michigan State, like, we would watch that all the time.
Yeah.
That's where I consumed it the most.
Yeah, for sure. That makes sense. So, if you could wake up tomorrow having gained any skill or ability, what would it be?
I don't know, a jiu-jitsu master.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. That'd be awesome, especially if you could do it.
If I could just skip to the end. Yeah. Like, I mean, I did some Muay Thai and stuff, but yeah, if you could just like learn everything and not have to go through the whole process, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. I like that one. If I worked for you, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
Shit. Don't be a dick.
Okay. I like that.
Not that you're a dick, man.
No, no. Nice guy. Sometimes. I probably am sometimes.
Not that I've experienced you. No.
Nice. All right, I got to work on that.
Not enough.
Nice, dude. Thanks for doing this, man. That was
fun. That's it? Lightning round over? Fuck.
It's fast.
I was like, Let's see. Sweating. I'm like,
see if we can think of some more.
He's gonna throw some hard balls at me. Oh,
no. Okay. What style of yours are you glad is behind you and not on social media?
Wait, which one?
A style.
Like, a style?
Yeah, a style that you are rocking.
Well, I mean, I definitely lived through an era where, I mean, does this has to be like social media years, or this could be like when I was a kid?
No, I'm saying, stuff that like you're happy that it's, like it's not out there like that.
Yeah, no mullets.
Right.
That's the thing. It's like everyone, did you have one? I feel like everyone had one.
There's a pic, my wife found a bunch of old pictures of all of us and like hung them at the front door in our house.
Yeah.
And so she's got this little picture of me. It's like a Prince vibe, like a little mustache and a
oh man,
mullet, and the shirt's open.
What?
Yeah, I was like, I was
80s like rock star Josh.
Like, I was like 13, and I was and
Richard Marx Josh.
Oh shit! No, definitely like, you know, I definitely like had Morris Day in mind when I would get dressed in the morning. Do you know what I mean?
That's funny, man.
No purple, but
That's pretty tight, man.
Yeah, no, there's definitely things that we're glad are behind. I mean, it's, you know, in my defense, like, I grew up in the 70s, it was like bell bottoms, like all, basically every style was bad until it wasn't.
Right. That's pretty much, like, what are we going to look like? We look back on this, like, 10 years from now, like, are we going to look like, fools?
I don't think so. I mean, you're not rocking, like, the super skinny.
Yeah, that's true.
Whatever, like. I think,
I'm rocking a shirt from 1989.
Right.
So
yeah, I think there's timeless. There's some timelessness. Chucks, you're not gonna be mad at Chucks.
Mm-mm. Timeless.
Nice, dude. Thank you for doing this, man. It was so much fun talking to you.
Thanks for having me, man.
How should everybody find you?
Instagram, Steingold Music.
Yeah.
Twitter, Steingold Music. SoundCloud. It's just Steingold, I think.
Cool.
.com/Steingold.
Dope.
So that's what it is.
Right on.
Yeah, that was Steingold on Rebel Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Like I said, leave us a comment on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can follow us at Rebel Radio Net. There's videos of a lot of our shows coming up on our YouTube page at Rebel Radio Net. And most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio. Peace.